Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
And a very good morning once again. This is Mick Mulcahy, Neil Prendeville on a very well-earned day off and making an extra little length in the long weekend. But let's get to the morning papers now. The Irish Examiner leads with patients still at risk of harm in UHL. The overcrowding there remains an issue and investment is necessary, says HICWA. Niamh Griffin, the Examiner's health correspondent, reporting on the front page. In the wake of HICWA issuing yet another damning inspection report on University Hospital Limerick UHL, the watchdog has said that overcrowding should not be inevitable with strong management and necessary investment. It's the latest inspection report on the hospital. HICWA found high patient numbers and overcrowding and warned the processes in place may not be fully sufficient to protect people who use the service from the risk of harm. And how sad that it took the death of a young lady to really shine the spotlight on the shortcomings there, not of the staff, but of the systems and the processes, I guess, and generally of the capacity and processing power. Let's hope it's fixed at UHL and other hospitals around the country. We'll never again hear that magic commentary. Also on the top of the front page in the Examiner, the very sad story by Liam Halen about Paddy Palmer, struck down just 500 metres from his family home. A Ukrainian national was sentenced to 6 years in jail yesterday for dangerous driving, causing the death of GAA broadcaster Paddy Palmer. As the family said, the accused hurt them more by blaming their loved one for what happened. And across social media last night, you can just feel the love for Paddy exuding, not just from his family, but from all who knew him. Mr. Palmer's family said that Bohdan Berzerski, age 35, had hurt them further by blaming him for what happened in the crash near Inishannon, County Cork in 2022. The broadcaster died after his car ended up overturned on an embankment at a junction near his home following a collision with the defendant's car, which was then driven from the scene. And Mr. Palmer's brother John said, "Every aspect of this horrific road traffic accident is very difficult to deal with. What makes it even worse is that the guilty party drove away from the scene of the accident, leaving our brother fatally injured in his overturned car on an embankment. The guilty party admitted to his mother and friends in text messages that he had left the scene of the traffic accident drunk." And I read the translation of those messages, which I believe were sent in Russian from the Ukrainian national. And we'll get to some of that a little later on, just after the newspaper report, actually, as we take up the story further with Barry Roach, the Southern correspondent from the Irish Times. Brian's last day at RTE. The book Dobbs Here. The man they call Dobbo is leaving RTE today. Well, tonight, after he appears on The Late Late Show. RTE legend Brian Dobson will sign off for the last time today after nearly four decades as the main face of Irish news. The News at One host, who's 64 years of age, will say goodbye as he retires after 37 years of loyal service to the state broadcaster. News pal Anne Doyle said Dobbo, appearing on The Late Late with Patrick Keelty tonight, will be sorely missed by all. Brian is irreplaceable, she said. He's looking hale and hearty, but he's certainly lost, seems to me to be a hell of a lot of weight, but looking well, smiling, beaming on the front page of the Irish Sun today. Helen McEntee is making many of the morning papers. Adam Higgins reporting in The Sun that justice officials warned 2 years ago that UK plans to deport migrants to Rwanda could see them come here instead. And why wouldn't they when there's an easy access point on the south border between the six counties? Minister Helen McEntee was told the policy would make them think twice about the Rwandan option, and said Ireland may be ultimately seen as an attractive alternative. More on that from the other papers as I get to them. The new Tory tack, by the way, is Ireland will be invited to send immigrants to Rwanda. Now, we wait, of course, to see how the Tories will get on. Not good so far as the results come in their local elections. Ours, of course, in about a month's time, but they're happening across the water in Britain. And the Taoiseach has decried the right-wing British press and its spin. Now, the combined journalistic power of Fionnuala Sheehan, Philip Ryan and Senan Maloney are on this story. The Tories are ratcheting up their diplomatic row with Ireland by suggesting that the Irish government will be invited to join the UK's much-derided Rwanda migrant deportation scheme. Government officials have dismissed the mischievous suggestion as tensions between Dublin and London over migration continue. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has warned opposition TDs about being taken in by the right-wing Tory press to attack the Irish government. A diplomatic row between Taoiseach Simon Harris and British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak continues to bubble away amid claims that up to 90% of asylum seekers arriving in Dublin have crossed from Northern Ireland. And the furore continues, of course. Is it 80%? Is it 90%? Is it the very specific 91% that was mentioned? But they are, these details have been taken in the IPOS, the IPOS office in Dublin. You would expect that somebody would nail their colours to the mast and say, look, this is the exact amount. Certainly maybe not of everyone who's here and waiting to be processed, but certainly from those who are processed. Let's wait and see. The surge in entries of asylum seekers from the UK is being linked to London's controversial plans to send migrants to landlocked Rwanda in Central Africa. And in the Irish Independent today, that story again that Minister McEntee was warned two years ago about the impact of the UK deportation plan. Going to the Irish Star, it's also covered in some detail on page 5. Department of Justice officials, our own department, warned that UK plans to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda were likely to make migrants think twice and look at Ireland. In a briefing on deportation, Minister Helen McEntee was told that while Britain's Rwanda policy was mired in legal actions, it will still likely have a knock-on effect for other states. It said it could make Ireland like an attractive alternative or as a stepping stone to later getting back into the UK for these migrants permanently. And that briefing was delivered in 2022. So this stuff was known about 2 years ago. Main front page of the Star has Kinahan thugs gun runner. An Irishman's been arrested over a Marbella restaurant attack but has skipped bail. And we are looking at a Star in a relationship with a music exec about half her age. The Star is 77 and the music exec is 38, and the Star is Cher. Cher said she dates younger men purely because anyone of her own vintage is dead. She always makes the headlines for kind of comical reasons, but I guess she doesn't care. A 77-year-old Believe singer is dating music exec Alexander Edwards, who's 39 years her junior. And she reckons the reason she clicks with guys his age is that they're more confident and have mothers who are similar to herself. Cher, who has released 22 studio albums, explained, "The reason I get with young men is because men my age or older are dead. Now most of them are dead, but before they were always terrified to approach me. And younger men, they were raised by women like me." You can check that out on page 21 of this morning's Irish Daily Star. Let's go to the Irish Times. Homeless migrants ordered to disperse and leave Mount Street is their main headline. Many asylum seekers sleeping rough after their tents had been cleared, and rules for modular homes may change to address shortage of accommodation. There are some fabulous modular home manufacturing companies here in this country, and you can knock up a two-bedroom house for under $100,000, A-rated. I'm not sure why that route has not been explored a little more. Microsoft's Irish subsidiaries have paid their US parent $56 billion. Microsoft's main Irish subsidiaries pay their US-based parent company just under $56 billion in dividends last year, accounts just filed here indicate. Accounts for Microsoft Round Island One, MRIO, a subsidiary of the global tech giant that holds investments in other companies in the Microsoft group, showed it paid a dividend of $38 billion to its US parent in the year to the end of June 2023. And let's have a look now at the Echo. Jail for causing death. Palmer family hurt that accused blamed victim. A 6-year jail term imposed on the man whose dangerous driving caused the death of GAA broadcaster Paddy Palmer, as the family said the accused hurt them even more by blaming their loved one for what happened. And we'll take that story up with Barry Roach in a moment.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
20 past nine. Let's bid good morning to Barry Roach, Southern correspondent with the Irish Times. Morning, Barry.
Good morning, Mick. How are you doing?
I'm good. Now, it's obvious that families can't really, really comment about the impact and the love and what they're missing, you know, in the form of what might be construed as a victim impact statement before a court hearing and sentencing, lest they would be accused of, you know, influencing that. But it's safe to say that the outpouring of love and respect for Paddy Palmer this morning and indeed last night on social media has been nothing short of amazing.
Oh, absolutely, Mick. Yeah. And we heard yesterday, as listeners may be aware, this man, a Ukrainian man called Bogdan Berzovsky. So I'll call him Bodan, sorry, because it's easier to pronounce his first name. He was convicted last week of dangerous driving causing the death of Paddy Palmer at Dungreen Cross in Ashannon on the 29th of December 2022. Paddy was seriously injured in the collision and he died at CUH on January the 8th. And of course, he'd been known to people. He was a teacher in St. Brogan's College in Bandon, was also a columnist for The Echo and sports commentator, I suppose that's how people knew him more, or best knew him. He was a really colourful, hugely enjoyable broadcaster covering GAA for radio sessions here in Cork. We heard yesterday, or the court heard, Cork Circuit Criminal Court heard from Paddy's daughter Claire, and she told how the lives of her mother, Colette, her sister Emily, and herself were hugely impacted by the fatal crash, which happened shortly after her father had left home in the morning of the 29th to catch up with a friend for a chat and coffee. She said, "Our father was the cornerstone of our family, our mentor, supporter and guiding star. His wisdom shaped us who we are as adults. His death has left a void in our identities and lives. And as a result of that sudden horrific departure, our family dynamics have shifted significantly." She told how her son Lucas was deprived of his granddad and how she had to postpone her wedding to her now husband Nicholas just months after the crash. And while they had got married some weeks ago, the nuptials proved a rather sad affair, as obviously her father wasn't there. "Not having your father walk you down the aisle, which is every girl's dream, was heartbreaking. And having to place my father's buttonhole of flowers on his grave instead of my mother pinning it to his suit was utterly distressing on a day that should have been the happiest day in our family's lives." She also told her mother, Colette, to forcefully put on a brave face to reassure her and her sister Emily that everything would be all right, while she herself, their mother, was struggling. And she said the whole legal process when the case was to go through to a retrial, listeners may be aware that initially the case was called and it collapsed because the juror indicated...
Yeah, a juror visited the crime scene, I believe, yeah?
Well, that was the second one. That was the second trial, yeah. That it was at the 11th hour. The jury, I think, had returned that case. It was heard in February. And over the weekend, it emerged one of the jurors visited the crash scene. That came back, was reported back to the fourth person of the jury, contacted the court guard, came back to the court, and that jury was discharged. So the family and the accused had gone through a trial for, I think it was over a week or so, and a number of witnesses, a huge number of witnesses have been called, and that collapsed. So this was a retrial. It started on April the 10th and finished on the 18th of 7 days of hearing, I think. So she said, made that point that to hear her, in fact, the trial collapse was very difficult. And she said then what was really distressing and hurtful for them was to hear her father being blamed for this incident was very offensive. A man who had only the respect of every single person he came in contact with, not just the county, but the entire country, grieved when they heard the news of dad's tragic passing, a pillar of society, the voice of Cork. And she said, to hear her father being blamed for this accident is hurtful. And even at this late stage, if the accused man had shown any sign of remorse and could at least realise the effect his actions have had, it would have been some comfort. But this remorse has never been seen. No, that was Claire Paddy's daughter's victim impact statement. And those comments were very much echoed by Paddy's brother, John, in a victim impact statement he delivered on behalf of the brothers, Dennis Ritchie and himself, where he said the fact that the accused, or the guilty man, Bowden had driven away from the scene was particularly difficult to deal with. He said the guilty party admitted to his and friends and text messages that he'd left the scene of the traffic accident drunk. It's very clear to us from transcripts of his text messages that he was only concerned about himself and demonstrated no concern whatever for our poor brother Paddy. There are so many upsetting aspects to this horrid moment in our lives. The guilty party went through a stop sign causing Paddy's car to spin and collide with the embankment, admitted in text messages he was drunk, drove away from scene of the accident and then refused to plead guilty. And he said, when the summer season kicked in, Paddy was on the airwaves where we would all tune in to listen to his magic commentary in big games. He had the ability to turn a bad game into a good game. And he said, we will never hear that magic commentary again. So that gives some indication, I suppose, or some clue as to the impact that his death in this horrific accident has had on his family.
I know the impact it had on my colleagues over in Broadcasting House who worked with him closer than I would have worked with him, because I was never in the sporting frame, shall we say. They were thanked yesterday, as were Bandon Garda Station, particularly Manus O'Donnell and Michelle O'Connor, guided the family through such a difficult time, all at Cork University Hospital. And these words are quite telling, especially the staff at the A&E and the ICU, whose dedication and care go unnoticed until one faces such a tragedy. So the whole community of Inishannon and indeed the country are behind the family here in their grief and sorrow. The smiling countenance of Paddy Palmer is beaming out at us across many of the newspapers today. But what was really harrowing, I suppose, to read yesterday, and it did pop up on social media, were the transcripts. I believe they were sent in Russian because this guy Bodan is Ukrainian, so Russian will be one of the natural languages there. But when they translate back into English, these texts really say it all. I am in the wrong 100%. I drove off. I was drunk. There is no excuse for me. I am guilty of it all. I will be jailed. I left the scene of a traffic accident drunk. I am a moron. I am guilty of it all. Don't know what happened to the people. I am blaming myself for driving off.
No, absolutely. I mean, that was very telling, I think, in terms of the evidence. But just going back to your point about Paddy's smiling face, actually, Claire in her victim impact statement just recalled that morning that he left. He shared his usual morning moment with my mother with a big wave goodbye and his usual cheeky smile. And then, as she said, he was struck by a vehicle just 500 metres from their home and never to return alive again. Going back to the actual detail of the crash, absolutely, as you say, Bodan Gardaí, he was arrested at his place of residence in Rigsdale House in Ballinhassig by a defective Garda Manus O'Donnell, who, as you say, was thanked along with the Garda Michelle O'Connor from Bandon Garda Station by Clare. But he was arrested by Manus O'Donnell and they seized his phone, and in the course of that they found these text messages which they had to get translated from Russian. He'd sent to I think his mother and other people back home in Ukraine. He said, it's not funny to me, I'll be jailed, the scene of a traffic accident, drunk, they will take me in now, they will come and get me. And that was one message. He said, I got into a car accident, advise me what to do, cannot see the right way out of the situation, I'm in the wrong 100%, I drove off, I was drunk, there's no excuse for me, I'm guilty of it all. Wrecked the car, left the scene of an accident, I was pissed. And that was in another exchange.
Yeah.
And then he said, nevertheless, I need to surrender to the garbage, which he meant Gardaí, we understand. I don't see any other way out. I think this is the most correct action. And then he said later, I'm sorry, I'm scared, I have no excuse. When he was interviewed about the crash by Detective Garda O'Donnell, and he said he planned to go to the Garda station the following morning before he was arrested. And then when he was actually charged, he said, and he was charged with a number of offences. He's charged with dangerous driving causing death, also charged with failing to remain at the scene, failing to report an accident. And he said, in response to all of those charges, he said, I'm guilty, I just want to apologise, I'm very, very sorry for what happened, I have no excuse, very sorry for my actions, I want to apologise, very sorry for my actions. But that actually, it was notable yesterday, there was no sort of expression of apology yesterday after his conviction or before he was sentenced, so I think that was noted by a lot of people in court, you know.
Okay. Was there anything made in court of... I know it made socials yesterday, making some of the press today, that there was a description by a detective of the accused video recording himself the previous day driving a BMW that he'd bought 2 weeks earlier at speeds of or in excess of 200 kilometres per hour just outside where we sit here in Red FM in Curraheen.
Yeah, that was one of the charges. He pleaded to that earlier. There wasn't a huge reference made to it yesterday, was earlier on. I mean, there's incredible speeds. I mean, I'm not sure where in Curraheen was, but I think the speed limit there is 100 kilometres. It then goes maybe to 120. But I mean, even if it's 120, it's still 200 is just, you know. crazy stuff altogether.
Yeah.
They were crazy. I mean, and we've had a few cases. There was a Garda National slowdown day. Was it two Fridays ago? No, I'm just trying to
show. That's right, yeah.
And there was somebody clocked in Lochaderra near Middleton doing 194 and 100, and there was somebody else clocked doing 112 or 114 on Main Street in Charleville, where the speed limit is 50 kilometres an hour. So, you know, they're incredible speeds. But this, yeah, he pleaded guilty to that, and he videoed himself at doing that, doing 200 on the Corrine, on the bypass there, and that was a plea or charge he pleaded guilty.
Other questions being asked online last night were, was the car NCT'd? Because apparently, if you're a Ukrainian here seeking whatever shelter or you know, benefit of the state that you're entitled to, you don't have to NCT your car.
I'm not aware that of the answer.
I could be wrong. But
yeah, but I know he was. He had a driving license and was fully insured, so I presume it was NCT'd. He'd bought it about a month earlier, as I understand it.
Okay,
but I couldn't say for sure whether it was NCT'd or not. Yeah, no, he had a puncture when he was in Crossbarry earlier that morning, put on a space saver tire on the front. But I mean, you know, we heard evidence during the trial from Ray Sweeney, the forensic crash investigator, and he said quite clearly that the junction there at Duncreen, that I'm just checking my notes here now, there was a stop sign, there was governed by a stop sign on Bowden's approach, the minor road, but at that stop sign from there he had 150 metres visibility clear back towards where Paddy Palmer was coming from. So, like, you know, he could not have seen Paddy's car coming, and Paddy had the right of way on it as well, you know, so there should be no argument about that, really.
If there's any little solace to be taken from the situation, I suppose it could be that he said his usual had his usual kiss and goodbye with his wife Colette, and spent what would tragically and ironically be some of his final moments having at least a bit of a Christmas. He should have had many more Christmases with his first grandchild, Lucas. And then left, and moments later, this tragedy occurred.
No, I suppose we've got some hint of how the family are coping, but I mean, you know, we're not there with them, and I've no doubt that there have been long, dark days since then, and you know, there probably will be again. But Claire did make the point in her victim impact statement. She said that this statement is a vital part of our journey towards finding closure and peace. It is also my hope that by sharing the impact of this loss, this court recognises the profound and lasting effect our father's death has had on us and on the country as a whole. So,
well, you have to recognise the outpouring of love from the family, because that's probably been welled up for some time and now suddenly finds release. And I hope that they find some recourse and some solace in the fact that it's reciprocated now and bouncing back at them, you know, from the general public into just what a great guy Paddy was, a man who could turn a bad game into a good game. And that's a skill on the air. And we'll never hear that magic commentary again, were the words, some of the words yesterday.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I remember when he passed away, there was a clip played of him commenting on a match, and I won't name the player, but he made an observation that he'd need a good dollop of Sudafed to put in his backside after getting a slap of a hurley. And that sort of I suppose summed up his colourful side and made him such a unique and individualistic voice and such an enjoyable commentator, really, for people to listen to, because he really did paint pictures for you, you know, and on the airwaves of what was happening. And as his brother said, yeah, he could make a bad game seem a good game, you know.
Yeah, always great to talk to you, Barry, albeit mostly on sad subjects. Thank you for covering this for us, and you know, for bringing extra goodness to the memory in these sad times, the memory of a great broadcaster, Paddy Palmer. Thank you very much, Barry Roach, Southern correspondent with the Irish Times.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
23 minutes to 10. Good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. Now, Camille Thai are doing our Free Food Friday once again. We have, I believe, some eager beavers in already. I haven't even announced the competition yet. But people know the drill, and we'll give you the drill now just in case you're new to this. But Camille Thai, by the way, make delicious Thai-inspired, here's me putting a H in, Thai inspired range of dishes using high quality, fresh and healthy ingredients that are also ethically sourced and sustainable. There's a huge range of vegan and vegetarian options, and they've got two branches in Cork. You can grab food to take away in Bishopstown, or you can dine in Douglas as well. Camille Thai is open every day from midday to 10 p.m. serving good, Thai food or good mood Thai food. You can order on the Camille Thai app or Camille, C-A-M-I-L-E dot I-E. Now today we've got lunch for 15 people from Camille Thai, delivered directly to you by our Red Patrollers, and today's menu is crispy chili chicken, chicken green curry, pad mang mang mong, that's pad med mang ung, minced chicken stir fry with cashews, edamame, peppers, shredded carrots, onions, scallions, broccoli, chili and garlic. And the pad prick hang, which is tofu, cashews, scallions, fine beans, peppers and onions. This all sounds pretty amazing, but you had me at crispy chili chicken. 8 portions of jasmine rice and 8 portions of brown and wild rice. Sounds brilliant. I'd say it'll taste even better. And if you want to get your name in for the draw, text your name and where you are, especially if you're in a workplace getting ready and geared up for the long weekend. We'd love to know who you are, where you're working, what you're doing, etc. Don't make it too long, though, because we need to call out a huge amount of names. Text your name and where you are to 0868 104 106. Now, thanks for holding Jackie McKeown on line one. Morning to you, Jackie.
Hi, Mick. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very good now, thank God.
Yeah, you were in the wars last year. I was in the wars myself, so I have some empathy with you. All good now, though. But you ended up with a lung infection. Yeah, you were treated with antibiotics. It didn't clear up. Take up your story for us.
Yeah, I just, the run-of-the-mill, really, kind of a chest infection, and went to my own GP. My own GP prescribed me some antibiotics, finished the antibiotics, thought I was okay. But like I had this lingering pain out the back of my lung, you know? And like I was there one morning, then my daughter, she was working nights and she came home and she says, "Mom, you don't look great at all, at all." She said, "Would you not go to either the doctor?" Or she said, "I think you should go to the hospital." So me being me, I say, "No, you're just being dramatic. I don't need the hospital."
It's the natural way, isn't it? I'm grand.
Yeah. I think that's us all out, isn't it? But yeah, she convinced me to go down, and Mick, thank God I did, because I ended up with sepsis. I was extremely, extremely sick. I ended up going down because my own doctor happened to be in the bands. I was under consultant for a different thing altogether. So I ended up going down to the bands. Within an hour of being down in the bands, a nurse, Natasha, she still checks in with me today, in fairness to her, she spotted the signs that I had sepsis.
Signs and symptoms, I imagine. What are the signs and symptoms of sepsis?
Well, the symptoms, I suppose, were I had a raging temperature, I had aches and pains all over, like horrendous aches and pains. I was caught for breath. I was gaunt looking. I was literally grey looking. I was thirsty, extremely thirsty, but couldn't go to the toilet, if you know. I was just generally unwell. Oh, and the shakes was a big, big thing. I couldn't hold a cup or anything, you know. Everything was falling out of my hand all that morning before I went in. And within the hour now, she's Natasha, she spotted it. I ended up being transferred from the A&E part of the band straight up to intensive care. I actually have no recollection of any of that. I ended up then that they did CT scans and they found out the source of where the sepsis was coming from. So they put a small drain into my lung and as they were draining out the poison, it was filling up again.
So this is a poison taking over your body, right?
Yeah, the poison that was taking over my body, yeah.
And if your daughter hadn't impressed on you the fact that you don't look well enough to be home without seeing a doctor, go and see your doctor, what would have happened? Imminent death, I suppose.
100%. They called my family, my partner, and our two kids. They called them down, told them how sick I was. I don't have any recollection of this, only that I just remembered Chloe crying over me, you know.
And so you're in and out of consciousness and probably hallucinating.
Oh, totally hallucinating, yeah. I was up in the bed in the intensive care, and like there was people under the bed. I just couldn't understand or comprehend who this person was sitting at the end of my bed, which turned out to be an ICU doctor who never left me for 4 days. Obviously, she went off shift but came back on, and she just happened to be there for the I spent 5 days in intensive care over there. What they did then was they tried to put in a second tube, which was a larger tube, into the lung again to try and get rid of all the poison that was accumulating in my chest. That didn't work. This was on it all started on the Tuesday morning. So on the Saturday evening, I wasn't getting any better. The doctors were just fantastic, but they didn't have the tweezers for what I needed done. So they brought a surgeon over from the CUH. He was a thoracic surgeon.
A thoracic surgeon, that's heart and lungs.
Heart and lungs, yeah, exactly. So he took one look at me on the Saturday evening, and he cleared his schedule for Sunday morning. He actually came in. He wasn't meant to be working that weekend. He came in, and they transferred me by ambulance from the Bonds over to the CUH. And 6 o'clock on the Sunday morning, they took me to theatre, where they had to crack my rib.
Oh.
I know. Just the saving grace, really, is that I was kind of out of it, you know. They took me down, they cracked my rib, and they shaved other ribs.
Sorry?
And
shaved.
They shaved.
You mean
yeah.
like a consaw or an angle grinder or something?
Yeah, they have to shave. They cracked one rib completely, and then they shaved a rib underneath it and a rib above it.
Oh.
For literally, all I can describe it is it was a garden hose that was sticking out of my chest.
I'm shivering here with your description. and once again reinforcing the fact that I could never ever be a medical professional. I'm gone off in a weakness myself with your description. Anyway,
I know.
All's well, obviously, that ends well, but you had 10 long days then in CUH. And how did you find the staff there and the consultants and the medical professionals?
Amazing, amazing. I have to say that now. I was, if it wasn't for both hospitals, I literally wouldn't be talking to you here today. They were amazing over there, but like that, I was kind of well enough, but not strong enough for home. So what they done then was both hospitals were consulting with each other all the time, and I ended up going back to the Bonds then to recuperate for 2.5 weeks. So I spent nearly 5 weeks altogether in hospital. It wasn't nice, you know. But look, I came out the other side, and I just have the utmost respect for both hospitals, because I wouldn't be here today without them, you know.
Absolutely. I'm not medical by any stretch of the imagination, but I can only think that the sepsis is trying to kill you. Your body is fighting to stay alive, and that battle can only be moderated with the medical intervention, with the drugs and the drainings and that expertise. But it's still touch and go, the fact that, you know, before they stem the tide of this sepsis, it's doing its job in trying to take your life. Your body's fighting the other way, but, you know, without that medical intervention, it's lights out.
Oh, 100%. They told my family when they were called that another couple of hours at home and I wouldn't have made it. It took me months after to recover. It really did. I lost 7 stone, Mick. Now, thank God, I could have done with losing the 7 stone, you know. But, like, that happened within 6 months. To lose 7 stone, and I was that sick, you know, after. But it was just like last week when Amy came on to share her story, and she said that because I was talking about it 12 months prior to that, that she recognised all the signs and symptoms from my conversation. So I just want to emphasise, like, that people should be talking about this, because, like, if I hadn't shared my story, Amy wouldn't probably have recognised it. And now she's sharing her story, so she could potentially save somebody else's life, you know?
It's true. And the more we talk about this, and the more... I remember one time I was involved in a charity regarding HHT, Hereditary Hemorrhagic Telangiectasia, and we published 10 books communicating with all of the primary schools around Ireland, in the children in the 9 to 10 year old age group, and the books of themselves told a generation of school children for 10 years in a row that age group would pass through the knowledge, or would become aware of the knowledge of the symptoms of this really rare but really really serious disease, and certainly lives were saved in the process. So I fully subscribe to the fact that coming on here is not only brave and selfless of you, but it's also helping people.
Yeah, hopefully. And do you know what now? Would you believe I actually had a hospital appointment myself last Thursday when Amy was on, and now it was unrelated, but I had to wait 2.5 hours after drinking this stuff, and I just happened to go out to the car, and Red FM is always on in my car. And I couldn't believe it when I heard Amy saying, you know, that for me sharing my story, and I knew too was my story, because she was saying about me being in the bands and my daughter, and how my daughter was going to Australia, and I was telling Neil all this at the time. I was saying, oh my God, that when she finished her story, I actually FaceTimed Chloe in Australia. And I was telling her, and she was saying, "Mom, that's amazing, like, isn't it? Do you know how it was just, I don't know, it could have been more people, but at least it got to one person."
Yeah, just a couple of more questions for you before I let you go, Jackie. And one is, you know, the health service in general gets a fair bit of bashing on this show, but never really the professionals that work within it. And I've said myself, I was a... had a couple of extended stays at the Mercy and the CUH last year, and I found the staff there nothing short of exceptional. You know, whatever you do about bashing the health service and the lack of beds, once you get past the front door, as they say, even if you are waiting on a trolley for 24 hours, I think it's second to none.
I agree. Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head there. It's once you get into their system at all, they're absolutely fantastic, they really are. Like, I don't think I would have got the care anywhere else in the country that I got in the CUH, you know. Now, granted, I was extremely sick, but, you know, like, that young girl, and I'm not bashing any hospitals, but that young girl that died up the country, I mean, that girl could have been alive today. if somebody had recognised those symptoms, you know.
Yeah.
So I was so lucky that they did with me, and that poor girl, like, you know, she was just misfortunate that they didn't. But as you said, once you get past the door, they are exceptional. They really are.
A couple of texts already in. I had sepsis 18 years ago. I was 17 at the time. I was 28 weeks pregnant. I was so sick, I put it down to a flu. I had an appointment in the hospital to have a checkup on the baby. And that's when panic set in. They couldn't find the baby's heartbeat. So I was kept in hospital. The doctors and nurses were trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I was shivering, sweating, barely able to walk with pain, hallucinations. I then ended up having an emergency C-section. My daughter was born 2 pounds, 11 ounces. I eventually found out that I had sepsis due to having a kidney infection that I wasn't aware I had. Thank God, all worked out in the end, and now there's more awareness around sepsis. Like I said, I thought I just had a bad flu at the time. Jackie, she's almost mirroring your symptoms there, shivering, sweating, barely able to walk with pain and hallucinations. There's one more text. Hi, Mick, I could have been like that girl in Limerick Hospital. I was in CUH last May. They did all the tests, bloods and everything, and sent me home at 11:30 p.m. 8:30 a.m. the following morning, I got a call from the hospital to come in immediately. My blood was poisonous. I had sepsis. I was transferred to the Bonds for 2 weeks. That's just two texts that came into the program. One final question. Now that you've had a realization of your own mortality, a close call, as they say, as I had last year, how do you look on life now? Do you grab every day as between both hands and shake it and say it's going to be a good one, or what?
I do. I wake up every day, Mick, and I do my gratitude list. I thank God every day. I know people, you know, have their own, you know, people that they pray to and stuff, but I and my mother. I think my mother was looking out for me. My mum passed 16 years ago. And I thank God that Chloe was home that day, because my son and my partner, Stephen, they probably would have just taken it from me, where, oh, I'm grand, kind of a thing, you know. And you, men kind of aren't, maybe including as women. But yeah, I do. I take life every day as I won't say now that I'm living life as it's my last, but I do. I thank God every day. And you know what? Now, I was devastated when I knew Chloe was moving to Australia, because she was like my best friend.
Jackie, we're going to have to finish this. I could talk to you all day, and I'm already getting
Don't
signals
worry.
There. Thanks a million for being so brave, for coming on and for highlighting. You know, if you're feeling unwell, get that checkup. If it's sepsis, you could be in big trouble. It might only be the flu, but better safe than sorry. Jackie, thanks and good morning.
Yeah. No bother.
Cheers.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Now, all week long, Neil's been giving away prizes regarding the Metropole Hotel. An overnight stay at the Metropole Hotel for two, with dinner in the Met Barn restaurant, followed by delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview restaurant overlooking the River Lee. And I'm going to give you more details, and we're going to change the mechanic. We're going to not just exclusively keep it to couples, but allow some singles to come in and maybe take a prize as well. So we'll tell you all about that and the Metro Hotel right after 10 o'clock. But it is Free Food Friday, Camille Thai, and on the Neil Prendeville Show, some fabulous food coming your way today. Crispy chili chicken, chicken green curry, Pad Meg Mangong, Pad Prick Hang. There's everything in there. Too much stuff to mention. Pepper, shredded carrot, onions, scallions, broccoli, all done the Thai way. And 8 portions of jasmine rice and 8 portions of brown and wild rice on Free Food Friday. In early, give a shout out to the lads in GRP Roofing Supplies Ireland, Unit 19, Tremor Commercial Park, the Complete Upholstery Centre and Foam Services on Barrack Street, Terry Collins Pathology Department in the SIVUH. In Mercy's Pharmacy, a bustling place, staff with smiles, full of grace, competing for food, their hearts do race, listening to Red FM at a steady pace. With potions and pills, they work with care, while tunes from the radio fill the air. hoping to win their excitement they share for free food. Oh, what a flair. So here's for the team with spirit bright as they tune in day and night. In Mercy Hospital, their aim's in sight for victory's feast and delectable delight. Well done, guys. Alison, Yvonne, Holly, Niamh, Rebecca and Kieran. That's one of the longer ones that was texted in. I'd like to nominate Little Hands Creche in Farran Ferris for Free Food Friday. They're so good with the children, they deserve a nice treat for lunch, especially my son's teachers, Tracy, Marcella, Michelle and Emma. We've got the great Mary Byrne coming our way at 11.30 today. What a story, what a life and what a voice. A real treat coming up at 11.30. News at 10 is next.
Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And some text to our text line, which is 086 8104 106. Many years back, a doctor watching The Late Late Show rang RTE to tell a politician that a tiny spot on his neck could be cancer and apparently saved his life. Thanks for that texter. Didn't know that one. My friend's husband never went to a dentist in time and had an abscess which had spread. When he did, he was sent to CUH immediately and put on a ventilator. He was on a ventilator for 4 weeks and again another 2 weeks when they woke him. So he must have been in a coma. Now, awful pain in the legs and ankles from not moving for so long. All over a tooth abscess. Let's stay on the topic of sepsis and join James on our WhatsApp line. Good morning, James.
Morning, Mick. How are you keeping?
I'm good. You know, sadly, you have personal experience of this and a personal and tragic loss. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I commend the two ladies that came on and spoke about sepsis, and I'm glad that it's getting such attention recently. Unfortunately, I lost my sister to sepsis back in June 2020, so it's actually coming up to our anniversary. Sadly, she passed away at the age of 37. She was a young mother of two. She had an autoimmune disease, so she had an underlying condition. So we thought it might have been something in relation to that. But when we were advised she passed away, it was from sepsis. So
okay, but I got involved with... Before we lean on your expertise and on your good heart and what you're trying to do in the Irish Sepsis Foundation, can you tell the uninitiated, me included, and those who might be listening, who really want to know more about this, what seems to be a quick killer, if not identified and if not treated. Would I be right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so time is essential with sepsis. Like, so obviously it needs to be treated quickly and promptly. As you probably saw with the Aoife Johnson case, hospitals are advised to treat sepsis within 10 to 15 minutes, whereas Aoife Johnson, it took up to an hour. And then also antibiotics can help with it. And poor Aoife didn't get anything.
I think it was 14 hours. And a quarter hours or something.
Yeah, 15 hours and 15 minutes.
15 hours, 15 minutes. If
antibiotics are got to it, then obviously it could be treated well. Now, that's not all cases. Sometimes each case is different, but yeah, it needs to be treated promptly. So like if you're in your GP, like you should ask, is it sepsis? Is it possibly sepsis? So that's our kind of warning sign to a lot of people.
James, it's sadly ironic, but hopefully helpful. It's sadly ironic that it took a young lady's life. Being lost, due to lack of timely attention, to bring the sepsis topic to the fore, and hopefully we can save lives by telling people what to look out for. I don't know how this is contracted. How do you pick it up? Is it just an internal body reaction that against a toothache or whatever, a rotten tooth, or what can you tell us?
Yeah, like so, basically. For my own sister, they couldn't advise us where it actually happened, where sepsis came in. Like, but it can just come on once your body has an infection already, that it can trigger kind of inflammatory response within your body. Like, and if it goes on, as we were talking about time, it can actually shut down your organs. So like, even like, this is what we're talking about, staying up to date with vaccinations, making sure you're washing your hands and whatnot, just to make sure that there's no infections that get into your body, because it can inevitably turn into septic shock, like, which is kind of almost nearly the final pathway.
And then the anti-vaxxers are saying and trying to confirm a link between multiple vaccine top-ups and cancer. So you know, the general public don't know what to believe or where to look. How did sepsis manifest? How did it present in your sister?
So when we were speaking inside, we were advised that they hadn't seen a case like this with sepsis in almost over 20 years. So they couldn't actually advise us where the sepsis came in. So it makes it that much harder for ourselves, especially when it was during COVID as well. So when you're looking for the answer and then you're dealing with the grief, like, that it makes it almost harder for ourselves to deal with it.
Okay.
So they couldn't find the sore spot, like, of where it actually happened at all, Mick.
And how much time did she have?
How do you mean? How long did it take?
From identification to her losing the battle.
So, like, my sister, people who knew my sister, she was a strong-willed person. She was a battler and she was a warrior. Like, she's sorry, it's just a bit upsetting when I talk to you about it.
No,
it's okay. I'm happy to talk about it, but it took a while, like, for it all to happen, because they were trying to see if it was to do with the autoimmune disease. They weren't too sure, but she kept battling through. I think it was towards the start of June, and then June the 20th, she passed away.
Okay. Now you're involved now with the Irish Sepsis Association, and you have a support group. If people want to talk about it, and is that a support group for people who have been bereaved by sepsis, or is it an information group where people might go along and say, what do I look out for? How do I avoid it?
Yeah, so it's my other sister, Sinead, who is the facilitator for that, and we have a counsellor with us. So it's for all people who are affected by sepsis. So if you've had sepsis and you're dealing with post-sepsis syndrome, now I'd say a lot of people don't know that you can get sepsis again if you've already had it. So we can also give out, we have information there as well. So it will be for people who have had sepsis that are dealing with post-sepsis syndrome. It's for the families as well, because what a lot of people don't talk about, whilst that person goes through sepsis and it's harrowing for them, it's also their family who are trying to help them and make sure that they're going to be okay as well. So it's open to all the public who've dealt with sepsis.
Okay, and this is held every Wednesday in Brú Columbanus. Now, I just want
the first,
to...
The first Wednesday of each month.
Oh, every first Wednesday of each month in Brú Columbanus. And for people who don't know where that is...
It's just out by Wilton. It's behind Wilton restaurant.
Yeah, behind the Wilton restaurant, near the shopping centre. If I can just lean on your expertise for a moment more. Some staggering figures here in front of me. Sepsis claiming almost 3,000 people a year. That's in 9/11 territory. Is this just in Ireland?
Pardon? Yeah, it's nearly close to 3,000 a year. Worldwide, it's 11 million. 11 million worldwide. It actually kills more combined breast cancer, prostate cancer, HIV and AIDS. And, like, obviously all terrible diseases as well, but they're all noticed, whereas sepsis has only begun to take stock.
Sepsis will take hold when the body degenerates because of another affliction. Okay.
So, like, as you were saying, like, it's an awful shame that has taken a young girl's life, that for people to take notice, like, because obviously when it doesn't come to your front door, you don't take as much notice, but that's what we kind of promised ourselves in the Irish Sepsis Foundation, to ensure everybody is made aware of it, and that, like the two ladies before, that we can hopefully save lives. If it's just one, if it's 1,000, then that'll be our job done.
Yeah, the other statistic which really caught my eye, it's starting to make a little more sense now, but not understanding what I do know about it, sepsis comes, you know, as a disease progresses, etc., and, you know, you're losing the fight. But a staggering 60% of all hospital deaths in Ireland are related to sepsis.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a stark figure for Ireland to have, like, and a study that was done back in 2018 advised us that only 28% of Ireland are aware of sepsis and what to do about sepsis. So hopefully that figure has come down and the other figure has come up.
Absolutely. And the loss of that young lady, Aoife, won't have been in vain, and that systems will be put in place. Knowledge will be, will be broadcast or printed. That will make people more aware.
We've actually wrote to the Taoiseach about all of this, and we're asking for a meeting with him to just sit down and ask them. Because, as you were saying on the show, like, the hospitals do get a bashing, like, but the people within them are amazing. Like, and they shouldn't be tarred with the same brush either. Like, it's just the system as its entirety, like, that it needs to be looked at, and especially for ourselves, we want stronger sepsis protocols.
Okay, here's a text which you might like to hear, because it kind of supports what you're saying there. Hi, Mick. My daughter was born with sepsis. She was taken to ICU immediately and given gentamicin and breathing support. They acted so quickly, she made a full recovery. I could not big up the nurses and doctors in the CUMH enough. They're amazing, especially the ones hidden away in the basement in the NICU. Isn't that a lovely text to get?
Yeah.
More or less it's endorsing what you're saying there. I probably need to clarify, sepsis is not always from a disease. A caller said that it can be a small infection. Yeah, I'm happy to clarify that, but it's just that the figure of 60% of all hospital deaths in Ireland are related to sepsis. I was saying, sure, that can't be true. But when sepsis develops as a progress or as a function, a sad function of a disease, that can be the one that is fatal. But of course, sepsis in Tracy's case and other cases, in Tracy's case unknown, sepsis can come from something as innocuous
as
a toothache.
Maybe
a cut finger in the garden, who knows? I don't want to be scaremongering here, but it's something that everyone needs to be aware of now.
Yeah, just like to jump on that, like, we had a young lady there who was only 9, Lauren, who got it from a small graze. So, like, exactly what you're saying, not trying to scare monger, but just to make people aware, because it is serious, like.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, and I hope you'll, it's going to be bittersweet, I suppose, but you're doing good because of Tracy's passing, and I know you remember her fondly on her birthday. What can I say?
Thanks very much,
thank you very much for coming on.
No problem.
Cheers.
Have a good weekend. Look
you
after
too.
Yourself. Bye-bye.
Okay, 21
bye.
Minutes past 10.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
10:24, Bank Holiday Friday. Neil Prendeville on a well-earned day off. He's back on Tuesday after the long weekend. Now, the Metropole Hotel have given us fabulous prizes to give away this week. It's been great fun as well. I've been listening to it with Neil, and the Met Bar and Restaurant in the Met is celebrating 127 years in business, serving delicious lunch, early bird and dinner menus 7 days a week with locally sourced seafood, cheeses and meats. And the Met Bar and Restaurant is perfect for a relaxed dinner or special family occasions like communions, confirmations and birthdays. Many's the happy couple that had their reception there as well. But what about this for a daily prize? An overnight stay in the Metropole Hotel for two with dinner in the Met Bar and Restaurant, followed by a delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview Restaurant overlooking the River Lee. Now, we've been dealing mostly with couples during the week, so we're going to give the singletons a chance as well. But we're going to do a kind of a Tommy Tiernan on it, okay? If you're brave enough, give us a call on 0818 104 106. We'll only put 3, 4, maybe 5 max of you on up on air. And we're going to ask you to speak for 30 seconds on a topic, but we're not going to, Tommy Tiernan style, let you know what the topic is until you're on air. But the prize is well worth it, so get calling if you want to take part on 0818 104 106. On line one is Angela Sweeney. Good morning to you, Angela.
Good morning.
Now, can I just say that you were on the Met competition and you didn't win on the day. But we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. But you are an accomplished author and you've raised money for Marymount and the Mercy. We'll get back to your story. You're the lady who went to Dublin on the Honda 50, are you?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, tell me first about the books that you've written to raise funds for the Mercy Hospital and Marymount Hospice. You've raised 50 grand.
Oh, yeah, and more. I was raising money for cancer for a while from a very young age. And then, God forbid, God spares, my son at 31 was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. But it was in the small bowel, which is very, very unusual. And then we have a lovely statue of Padre Pio up in Rochestone. So I went up there and I spoke to him. And I said, I raised over £20,000 at the time for the Cancer Society if you save me my child. Because they said in the hospital, we'll have to wait to see what he make it to the morning. And of course, I was running everywhere. But then I said to my husband, I said, I'm going to write a book. He said, we're not going to write a book. I said, I am.
I'll give you a book. You couldn't no more write a book now, he said.
Well, you see, to be honest, we were in bed and I tapped him and said, Pat, I'm going to write a book. I go back to studio and I'm going to write any book. So then what I did then was, cut a long story short, I asked every single business in the town and the surrounding areas and doctors and everybody I met, everybody I knew, €25 per page. And then all those 25 euros came up to nearly 8,000. And the publisher did 2,000 copies for the 8,000 that I had. And I had a big lovely lunch in the town hall and got more money than that, and I didn't realise that. And by the time I was finished, I had, I think, around 26,000. Then people were saying to me, does that enough history and that? And I was saying, well, this is only a coffee table book, you know? So then I started doing the history of Cracklore Harbour. And I did that in three parts, and I raised funds for that.
Okay, you have six books, though, have you?
I have six. One then was my daughter. You go on.
Okay, no, I was just wondering what came next.
My daughter, I didn't have a very good education and I wasn't very good at the reading and the writing. And I used to tell my children stories out of my head. And I told my daughter a story called Pepe the Magic Doll. And she loved him. You know, everybody had a birthday, got a story typed out and a doll knitted. And basically then one day somebody said to me, why don't you do that book for your daughter, that story you tell? So I wrote a book called Pepe the Magic Doll, and it was for the Mercy Hospital Leukemia Ward, Children's Leukemia Ward. And I raised about £9,000 on that. And between the other three, and the last book I wrote was called Come Here Until I Tell You a Good One By.
Very good. I'm fondly remembering the late great Sister Fidelma, who helped so many children in that ward in the Mercy Hospital.
She was fantastic, actually.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. But they're all, it really, you must be honest, that's a calling. That's not a job at all, that's a calling.
You're absolutely right. It's devotion. Precious. Devotion to a call.
Yeah. And then I worked in the shop in Oliver Plunkett Street for 11 years as well.
You've had a very coloured life. Can we recap on the your son was diagnosed with cancer at 31, and that's why you're doing all these charitable efforts. And did you find writing came easier to you as the years went by and as the book count started to grow?
No. What actually happened was Marvin was promoted the most again.
Okay.
I went to UCC for a course for computer science and technology, and that enabled me to be able to set up the book then and set the margins and you don't start the book on the right hand side, you have to start on the left. Not a lot of people know that a chapter has to start on the left. You have to sew the margins on the top and the bottom, and when you're actually writing it, you have to leave a full space in between for the editor.
Right, and that saves it being proofed later, I guess. So that's very worthwhile.
I actually had a very, very good editor called Judith Casey.
Did you get through all the books there with me? What was the last one again about your daughter?
No, that was Pepe the Magic Doll.
Oh, yeah, there was one, Come Here Till I Tell You Boy or something, is it?
Come Here Till I Tell You Good One Boy. That's all jokes. Jokes. And funny things and anecdotes and tips about things. It's just a real coffee table book now. Okay. It's a book now to take with you.
Where can people find the books, Angela? Where can people find and buy the books?
Oh, not a hope in hell. Now, you will get one down in Middleton in a place called Rare Books, where it's €135.
Oh, okay.
It was 10.
But it's so rare now, they're out of... Would they benefit from going into reprint, do you think?
I don't think so, because, to be honest and truthful, you know, there's so many GoFunds, so many walks, so many races.
Yeah, so many GoFundMes.
So many going to do races and do running and do jogging and do stepping and do, you know, GoFundMe. And, like, I work as well now with the homeless, and, like, there's an awful lot goes into that as well.
Yeah, okay. Listen... as much as you've achieved in your life, I was sorry you didn't win one of the daily prizes the other day.
I'm sure you understood.
Yeah, you're up against somebody who met their husband at their own engagement party.
She threw it. I knew that would win, actually.
Okay, can we just get a brief recall of your story? I think you gave your hubby... You approached him at a ladies' choice dance, was it?
I did. I walked over and I said, "Are you coming out to dance?" And he kind of looked at me, and I kind of cut his hand and ran out onto the floor. Very shy, very quiet person.
That was back in 1968,
lad.
And that was in the community hall. So carry on, what happened then?
We met in the community hall, and... it was over Friday night, and he asked me when I go on Saturday night, and I said, "I'm babysitting for my mum and dad." And because I promised a friend of mine was going to Majorca every Saturday night. And I was going to go to church for Saturday evening and say, "I'm not going to Majorca, I met someone." So I might never see Paddy again.
It'll always be the Majorca, won't it, in Cork?
What's it called, the Majorca?
Majorca, down in Crossar.
Yeah, that's it, fine. Bang on. So the next thing that happened then was just chucked him over and danced me, chatting away 10 to the dozen. And I said to myself, keep it off, French, in my own mind. And when people ask you, do you want to go away with him, do you want a bottle of orange? And like I was saying, I was like, jeez. So I said, "Excuse me, I need to go over there. My friend is waiting for me."
Okay.
The next night, Paddy came down on Sunday night to get off the bus in Glenbrook, and I was waiting for him. And he said, "Hello." And I said, "Hello." We kind of recognised each other again, if you can understand me.
Yeah.
So,
you started going out, and that was a year and 4 months, and you were married.
Yeah, but he asked me when I met him in Glenbrook off the bus this Sunday night, "Did you enjoy the Majorca last night? Did you enjoy the babysitting last night?" I said, "I did." He said, "My brother said he danced you down in Majorca."
Oh, no, you were caught.
I said, "Your brother?" I said, "Who's your brother?" He said, "Michael Sweeney." I said, "Is he your brother?" I knew Michael, but I didn't realise. You know?
Yeah, okay.
So we went off and out together, then we got engaged, and then out of the blue, Paddy says to me, "Are we ever going to get married?" I said, "No, we'll never be able to say it."
I want to hear about you eloping, if you can tell me that. You eloped.
We couldn't say to get married, so we decided to get married as soon as we could, so we down to the priest. And he said, "You know, now you can't get married, your length will be about 10 weeks. I said, "No problem, Father." He said, "How old are you now?" I said, "Well, I'll be 16. I said, "Next." I was only 15, then for January. So he says, I said, "I'll be 16. And you're getting married?" I said, "I am, yeah." So
you must have been pretty sure of yourself, were you?
I was. And I loved the minute. It was over first sight. The minute I saw him, I thought,
what I don't think. She was quiet and gentle. All the other lads now were drinking and throwing themselves around with it.
And you're going to be married to 54 years on this day, on this very day.
Yesterday. 54 years.
Okay.
But the eloping came from, she went up the back road of the town, I went down the front road, we met at the church, we went in and got married, and five of us walked up the town. There was eight at my wedding.
Oh, brilliant. And the honeymoon was up to Dublin on a Honda 50.
3 months later after the wedding, we got married on the 2nd of May, and on the next bank holiday was the August bank holiday, and we said we'd go to Dublin.
Are you still as happy as ever?
Oh, God, yes. Ah, yeah.
What's his name?
Paddy. He's quite the lamb.
He's what?
He's as quiet as a lamb.
Is he? Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to redress the fact that you didn't get that that prize for the Metropole and give you an overnight stay with Paddy at the Metropole, as if you choose to bring him, in the Metropole hotel for
could
two...
Could I bring my boyfriend?
Do you what?
Instead, could I bring my boyfriend? He doesn't want much, Paddy.
You can bring whoever you want.
No
problem, Angela. Overnight stay for you and Paddy in the Metropole Hotel for two. Dinner in the Met Barn restaurant and followed by a delicious breakfast overlooking the Riverlea in the Riverview restaurant.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay. Happy anniversary today. 54 years married.
Thank you
very much. Okay. I knew that this would take some bravery, but if you want to come on and talk about a topic for 30 seconds, they're easy enough. Then give us a call on 0818 104 106 and we have that final Metropole Hotel prize to give away. Met Hotel celebrating 127 years in business. Dinner for two at the Met Barn restaurant followed by delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview restaurant overlooking the Riverlea. The Singletons were saying we're not getting a chance. Now we're giving you a chance. Call 0818 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
19 minutes to 11 o'clock. Good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. Just got a very funny text from my old buddy Joe. And this is tongue-in-cheek. He said, I got this from Eamon Ryan. This is a funny one. Imagine we lived in a world where all cars were electric vehicles. And then along comes a new invention, the internal combustion engine. Think how well they would sell. A vehicle half the weight, half the price, that will almost quarter the damage done to the road. A vehicle that can be refueled in one-tenth of the time and has a range up to four times the distance in all weather conditions. It doesn't rely on the environmentally damaging use of non-renewable rare earth elements to power it and use far less steel and other materials to build it. Just think how excited people would be for such technology. It would sell like hotcakes, satirical comedy at its best. Now, we're giving away some great food with Camille Thai today. They make their delicious Thai-inspired range of dishes using high-quality, fresh and healthy ingredients that are also ethically sourced and sustainable. Huge range of vegan and vegetarian options as well. There are two branches in Cork. You can grab food to take away in Bishopstown. You can dine in Douglas. And they're open every day from midday to 10 p.m. serving good mood Thai food. And you can order on the Camille Thai app or Camille Camille.ie. We've asked you to text into 0868 104 106 as we do every Friday. The Cutthroat Barber in Curraheen, Sheehan Heating and Plumbing listening as well, and we'll share them, says Sam, share with them. Hi there, listening from Sports Gear Direct on the Tramore Road. We'd love some food to keep us going. All the staff here at Catch and Snap Mental Health Services in Ballincollig Primary Care Centre would love some free food Fridays, says Rachel. DC Valeting in Churchfield, we will share with our lovely neighbours. Northside Tires, Old Mallor Road, would love to win lunch, please. Karen and her colleagues in the South Infirmary Pharmacy Department would love to share some Thai. Myra O'Riordan and all the staff working hard, looking forward to the bank holiday weekend. Catch and Snap team, Ballincollig Primary Care Centre, Cork. Hi, my name is Dennis Carney from Mallow. If I win, I would like to give it to Meals on Wheels. Nice one, Dennis. Camille Thai, be mighty by for all at ECI JCB in Carrigtool. Architectural and Metal Systems Limited in Little Island. We would really love some tasty treats on Friday afternoon. We're all working hard here, extruding profiles and listening to Cork's Red FM. All here in Home Instead in North Cork, working hard all weekend. No time off for us carers. We'll be very, very busy and very hungry. Please send us some food. And that's from Karen and the gang. Well deserved, I'm sure, if you win. Now, let's go to line two and tell you very quickly about a festival that's coming up very soon. And we'll join Michelle O'Mahony. And it's the first year of this festival. And Nuri is showcasing the town. PR and media organizer for the event, Michelle, joins us on line two. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Mick. Welcome to Intergalactic Dunmanway this morning.
Intergalactic Dunmanway. A weekend of Star Wars themed activities, workshops and cosplay. You're a day early.
Well, we're a day early, but you know, I think you're probably not on air tomorrow, so may the 4th be with you a day early.
May the 4th be with you.
So it's absolutely, we're looking forward to the next month of activities. We have a launch night on the 16th of May in the Parkway Hotel for the Feel the Force Festival, and then straight in then to Star Wars, everything Star Wars, on the 1st and 2nd of June. Saturday and Sunday, the Manway will really be showcasing all things Star Wars. We will have cosplayers, customizers, vendors, suppliers, people supplying Star Wars Lego, everything that you can imagine, with quite a lot of cosplayers from various realms. Movie authentic costumes will be on display in the Manway. People in costume walking around the streets. There will be workshops. I think the town is going to be transformed. And for many people, they associate Sam Maguire with Dunmanway. So we're going a little bit out there, shall we say, to a completely new dimension with tourism this summer for this weekend. I would say the festival centres around Nuri Bakri, a Malaysian head chef at the Lep Inn.
Oh, he's a Star Wars fanatic. Airline.
Absolutely a Star Wars fanatic, and we're absolutely delighted that he chose Dunmanway to be where he wants to live and to showcase his collection. You may have seen it in the newspapers last year. He was interviewed by the Star Wars magazine because he also makes some costumes, and he started making costumes about the Tusken Raiders. So himself and Caroline, they were involved in our local arts festival, and they drew a crowd. So the local Chamber of Commerce, the events committee and all the various other organisations decided, look, let's showcase our town, and Nuri will be our focal point. And he's literally gone strength to strength. He's a TikToker, an influencer, a Malaysian head chef. For anyone who loves cooking, feel free to Google him and look on his social media platforms. There's some interesting recipes. But he is a collector and an absolutely wonderful creator.
And someone tell me he had a bit of a cameo role in one of the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, yes, I think it's the there's a small movie, an offshoot was made around Dunmanway. I think it's one of Michael Fitzgerald's ones, or may have been another one. And we will be showcasing that as well over the course of the weekend. So there'll be something for everybody.
Outside of Star Wars aficionados and fans, will it appeal to anybody with an interest in the cosmos and in space travel?
Yes, I think it will, because there's something for everybody. The children can come down and get their face painted. The big children and the parents can come. And, you know, I think everybody knows Yoda. Everybody knows Baby Yoda and Guru. So I think it's instantly recognisable. You know, you don't have to know all the characters. I suppose I'm on a very deep learning curve, Mick, as you know. I usually dabble in history and do history consultancy, but because it's in my local town and I know Nuri, they've asked me to do the PR. So he's getting great traction in the media. A lot of the newspapers have been following him. You may have seen last week's Irish Examiner. He made the front cover where he was in his Stormtrooper outfit.
It's a really, really authentic looking outfit he has there. It's like it came directly from the set.
Well, I suppose Nuri is so creative and inventive. So when they order these costumes, they turn up looking really, I suppose, plastic and shiny plastic. But Nuri feels that they don't look authentic enough, the ones that you kind of purchase online for yourself. So he goes about what he describes as weathering them and making the suit of armour look like it just literally walked off the set. So he paints them individually and he customises everything. He has customised helmets, even to the point that on a sunny day I was thinking, you know, you're going to be extremely warm in these heavy costumes. And he said, no, I've sorted. I've put air conditioning into my helmet. So he's put a fan in to keep them all cool. And he has set up a group in West Cork known as the West Cork Tuscans. So guys, if you're listening, we'll see you all in a few weeks, and we'll probably see you on the 16th. And I think there's an event happening tomorrow in Portmagee down in Kerry. So if anyone is in Portmagee tomorrow for the Star Wars or the sci-fi event that's going on down there, Newry and some of the Tuscans from West Cork will be down there also. So it's going to be a fabulous event, Mick. I'd recommend people definitely travel to Dunmanway and experience the Cade Mhéile Fáilte Dunmanway style for that weekend in June. But I'm sure there'll be a lot more coverage in coming weeks.
Okay. I hasten to say I know a couple of space cadets myself from Dunmanway.
Oh, dear, that's good. Good.
No names shall be mentioned. Anyway, it's Feel the Force Festival. Feel the Force, Dunmanway Festival. May the 4th be with you, but it's happening on the June weekend, June 1 and 2. Thanks, Michelle, for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's, of course, tomorrow being May the 4th. And it's a play on May the 4th be with you is going to be a big, big day for the Star Wars and Trekkies and all of the other space cadets. I say that in the nicest possible way. Hi, Mick. Completely different topic now. Hi, Mick. When women and girls are statistically identified as being at disproportionately higher risk of sexual assault at the hands of male rapists, we rightly acknowledge this reality and we discuss this reality politically and in the media, with the powers that be going so far as to propose specific laws and targeted consent classes for primary school children. Well, Mick, with that in mind, why is it when discussing the evil of clerical sexual abuse, the same media and political establishment brush over the no less relevant statistical reality that virtually every incident of clerical sexual abuse was committed against young male victims at the hands of older male rapists? This is male-on-male sexual assault, Mick. Is there another term for it, Mick? Are we serious and sincere about tackling the scourge of rape and sexual abuse, or are certain protected categories of society immune to criticism? It seems we're happy to categorise rapists into groups and openly discuss the contributory factors of these groups on the crimes of the rapists when these groups are some combination of white, male, heterosexual or native, for example. But when the guilty belong to other certain groups, we stubbornly refuse to do likewise. Does our outrage against rape and sexual abuse end where identity politics begins, Mick? And that came from Richie, and happy to call it out. A fair bit of work went into writing that text. It's only fair that it gets a shout out. On the cash machine, can you read the cash machine number with digits, please? We do, I always do. Some of us hard of hearing find it difficult to make it out. Let me give it to you now again, right? We don't normally do this, but if you have missed it, and I don't think you will have, it's been called out so many times. Let me find a bit of paper that it's on, and it's 100 grand plus anyway. And now, would you credit it? I can find it, because I put it away because I was finished with it, that's why. But I'll call it out for you again between now and the end of the programme. So if you want to keep those texts coming in, please, for Free Food Friday with Camille Tye, then you can do it to 0868 104 106. And we'll be giving away that prize just before 11:30.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
It's coming up on 5 to 11. We've got Aidan on line 2. Good morning to you, Aidan. Oh, Aidan is gone. You see, this takes a bit of bravery, but if you want to get through to us for our final Metropole stay over, dinner and breakfast over the River Lee, then please do get in touch on 0818 104 106. Just going to talk for 30 seconds is all you got to do. Hi, Mick. I heard Neil mention during the week that we need to be more mindful of our carbon footprint and protect our environment. He fails to realise that vegans and vegetarians are the worst offenders. It's the farmers that are protecting their precious veggies, who kill all the animals who feed on the foods they like to eat, like soybeans. Also, a lot of veggies and vegans would eat highly processed foods, which is damaging to their health. So while they are damaging the planet, they're also killing themselves. So said John in Cove. Now, unusually with this email that came in from John in Cove, he also included some WAV files. Now, WAV files are what we can upload here to what we call the hotkeys, and we can play them for you. So John has said, I've added corroborating evidence from superstars, Piers Morgan and Ted Nugent. Now, I wouldn't call Piers Morgan a superstar. I'd call him a star. Ted Nugent, on the other hand, would have been a superstar back in his day. One of the big heavy rockers of the time. Had a couple of rude titles in his songs as well. But anyway, John, thank you for those. I'll play them for what they're worth. I think this is a sort of a Three different interviews at three different sections of the same interview being stitched together by Piers Morgan. Here's Piers Morgan on vegans.
Ladybirds, bugs, they get destroyed in the production of wheat crops, right, so that you guys can munch your bread. Or they fly in billions of bees to create your almonds and avocados, and in that process, several billion bees get murdered. Or, you know what's also a leading cause of climate crisis? Planes which carry vast amounts of your avocados and your almonds from California and fly them thousands of miles to your table here in your vegan cafe.
And that's Piers Morgan. Now, I know this is going to have our vegan fraternity and our vegan listeners exercised. And of course, you've got the right of reply. We'd love to hear from you. And if we don't get to today, it'll be probably with Neil on Tuesday. But you are very welcome to call us on 0818 104 106 or by text. You can get in touch on SMS or WhatsApp on 0868 104 106. And if you don't feel like calling after hearing Piers Morgan, then when you hear what Ted Nugent had to say on a previous Joe Rogan podcast, then maybe you will feel like getting in touch.
If you really want to kill the most things, be a vegan. Because the farmers who protect your beans kill everything. I kill one animal per arrow. In order to grow tofu, you have to kill every ground squirrel, every vole, every shrew, every snake, every turtle, every frog, every bird, every rabbit. Anything that gets in that bean field, I'm either going to plow and dismember, which is why the crows and the seagulls follow the combines every year. And then if anything does survive my first slaughter, I'm going to come in with Monsanto and poison the out of everything so you can have a tofu salad and not be responsible for any death. You.
That's a really good point, and it's a point that a lot of people ignore.
And avoid, because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Isn't life full of uncomforting things? And you shouldn't be uncomfortable. To kill game to feed mankind is perfect. To kill cows and pigs to feed mankind, it's the system is often less than perfect, but until someone comes up with a better system, I salute and genuflect at the altar of farmers and ranchers and people who kill animals to sustain my fellow man.
So that's the content and pretty much the same opinion of Ted Nugent and Piers Morgan. It's already eliciting response, just as we were kind of happily plodding along towards the bank holiday weekend. A little bit of music coming up at 11:30. Now I think, John, you've put the cat among the pigeons. Please tell John in Cove that there is more land used and crops grown to feed the animals that he eats. Please do your research. I'm happy to take the topic up and to put some research into it, but we played them and read the email because the email came into us and we thought maybe you have an opinion on it and maybe our listeners would benefit from hearing it. On Free Food Friday, NEH4 Chill, everyone working hard and would love some lunch, Charlotte and Catherine. Camille Thai food, please, for Ego Hair Studio in Ticknock and Cove, working very hard. And Martina Murphy, the girls in Homestead in Shanakiel North Cork office deserve a lovely lunch. We have more after 11 o'clock news, which is on the way right now.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And what a great prize we have from our friends at the Metropole Hotel. 127 years in business. And Neil's been having some great stories about how you met, because it's the Met, Tavern, and of course you're going to have the Met breakfast from the Riverview restaurant overlooking the River Lee. We've one more to give away, and the singletons amongst you were giving out that it was only for couples all week, so let's take some callers now. Very brave to come on, because we've told you we're not telling you the topic until you come on air. And good morning to Aidan. Aidan and Douglas.
Good morning, sir. How are you keeping?
How are you, sir?
Very well at the moment.
Okay, well, I tell you what, I'm going to be a little gentle on you because I don't have a 30-second clock. I've got a 20-second clock, so let's do 20 seconds rather than 30, okay? So in true Tommy Tiernan style, you don't know what's coming up. You don't know who's coming on. And I'm just, some of these are pretty good. Have you any interests?
I'd be a bit sporty, I suppose.
Sporty. Okay, well, we'll give you this one then. Ready to go? You can speak for 20 seconds, please, on my hobbies.
My hobbies would be mainly sport and work. I love going to work every morning, meeting all the nice people that I work with. And then after that, I kind of leisurely like going to play sport. I'm still involved in football. I used to play hurling and soccer and GAA. I like watching the rugby. I like watching snooker at the moment on telly. Everything is good on sport.
Hey! You made it. You might have struggled with the last 10 seconds if I had a 30-second clock, would you?
I'm just getting tired of it all.
Aidan, you're in the running. Thanks a million.
Thanks very much, Rick.
Thanks. No, all the best. Bye-bye. Let's go to Susan on line two. Hiya, Susan.
Hi, good morning.
20 seconds, please. Let's find one here now for you. Where I grew up.
I grew up in the north side of the city. I actually still live in the north side of the city. I lived in number... in the house 3 doors down from where I bought. I went to school in the north side. I married a man from the south side. I think north side people are very friendly, very helpful, kind to one another, look out for each other.
Well done, well done, well done, Susan. Sorry about the false start there. How would you have done on my wedding day?
Well, I would have done fine on that as well. I'm married 35 years.
Okay.
So, must have been a good wedding day.
Exactly. All happy ones, I hope. Hopefully we can make it happy for you.
All happy memories, yeah.
Okay, that's about it for now. So we'll do the draw a little later on. We may have some more callers on that fabulous competition from the Met. Thanks a million. Cheers,
Thanks
Susan.
Thanks very much.
Thank
happy
you.
Friday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We met at the traffic lights, came in a text. Her lips touched my cheek. Our hands touched, and we've been in love ever since. Don't have much more detail than that. We're 2.5 years down the road now and very happy, said David. If you want to take part in that Good Times Metropole Hotel competition, then get in touch. We'll take one or two more if we have time. 0818 104 106. The Met Bar and Restaurant in the Metropole Hotel is... celebrating 127 years in business, serving delicious lunch, early bird and dinner menus 7 days a week with locally sourced seafood, cheeses and meats. And the Met Bar and Restaurant is perfect for a relaxed dinner or special family occasions like communions, confirmations and birthdays. And up for grabs, one more of them, an overnight stay in the Metropole Hotel for two with dinner in the Met Bar and Restaurant, followed by a delicious breakfast the next morning in the Riverview Restaurant, overlooking the River Lee. And there's a text for me. It says here, "Hey Mick, that was my mother Angela you gave the Metropole break to. Thanks so much, Mick. It will do them good as they rarely get away. Mick, I was the chef in the Ensign Bar with Jono and Caroline and used to feed you and the family." Yes, that's the different times, different management. I know that Gavin and Daniel are now running at about 12 years, run a very tight ship, great entertainment. Maybe not so heavy on the food service, but as it was back then, but I know they do pizzas and that kind of thing in a limited kitchen way. So, yeah, great local business. Can I just, by the way, seeing as it came up there now, mention that there's a new business opened in our locale. Well, it's not so much a new business. It's a long-standing business under new management, and that is Murph's Pub. You could call it Raffine, I suppose, or Raffine Creek. Now under the new management of Eugene, who's taken it on and is there kind of solo in Soho most nights. Very engaging guy, and we want to wish him the very best of luck taking on a business in these straitened times. Can never be, I suppose, underestimated, and he's putting in a lot of hours, and I just want to wish him the very best in Murph's in Raffine. So best wishes there, Eugene.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Lots of people wondering, are the local election candidates calling or not? And we had a big social media piece on it yesterday. I'm sure Neil will get to it next week. A lot of people are saying that they're just getting the "sorry we missed you" through the door with no knocks, just the paper coming through. Just on a sample of one, we were at home last night, knock on the door. It was would-be councillor Una McCarthy running for Fine Gael, came along with one of our neighbours, Gary James, just kind of showing her around. It's rare we get a knock on the door. In fact, I think the last person to knock on our door politically was many, many years ago in the shape of a would-be TD called Michael McGrath. Elected he was, and that'll tell you how many years ago since we had a political knock on the door. But it came last night, just as I was reading during the day about people saying they're not calling. Yes, we have had other candidates who have scribbled "sorry to have missed you," and I'm convinced I was home. But there you go, on a sample of one. Well done to Una McCarthy for calling around the Monkstown area yesterday. Tim Brown is a long-standing friend of mine. I wanted to bring him in on this. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. Good morning, Mick. How are you?
Yeah, I say we're long-standing friends because I don't want any conflict of interest to be perceived here. But I immediately said, let's get Tim Brown on this, because we had an email from a guy called John in Cove, and then we played two very anti-vegan voice recordings from Ted Nugent and from Piers Morgan. Now, they have their opinion. The vegans are welcome to come on, and the vegetarians, and all of that. But I'm more looking to you to provide the purist side. I know you're a nutritionist. I consider you one of the best in Europe, if not the very best. Tell us about... Let me try and frame this by saying, whether you're a vegan, a vegetarian, or a carnivore, or a fast food eater, or whatever, you're invariably trying to get the vitamins and the minerals from the foods to fulfill the lifestyle you have chosen to take. But what I'm feeling is there an awful lot of processed foods now coming into the vegetarian and vegan diet as well? And could you maybe expand on that?
Yeah, well, let's put personalities to one side. Poor diet has overtaken tobacco as the leading cause of death globally. Poor diet means ultra-processed foods. And this is the whole subject here. You see, these processed foods are similar to cocaine, that they work on the brain, they create a strong desire for people to have this reward signal that you get from highly processed foods. So people become addicted to them.
So is it like dopamine in chocolate, Tim?
Well, that's unfair to chocolate, because dark chocolate is extremely healthy. But yes, you're right that excessive, we're not going to start naming names here, but it upsets me when I go into a filling station that a gentleman is trying to, or a lady is trying to pay for her fuel, and she's her child with her, and they put highly processed foods within the child's reach, and then the child has a tantrum and the parent is embarrassed into buying it. And it's society. Like, what I'm saying to you is not my personal opinion. University College London has highlighted that this is a serious problem. When you go to beautiful places like Glasgow, there's out of every four people in hospital, three are there to do with obesity and diabetes. So it's an enormous burden to governments, people's bad eating habits.
Okay, so you're not against vegetarianism or veganism per se, or a carnivore per se. You just want everyone to eat in balance.
Yeah, well, I've worked in London. I've trained with diabetic doctors on how to assess your potential of becoming a type 2 diabetic. And I have very modern equipment that measures complex compounds called EGs. But let's not get technical about this. Let's look at the reality that type 2 diabetes is a major burden. And unfortunately, I've worked in London where there are people, and we're not going to get specific here, but there are people from certain religious communities that are vegan. And I'm not anti-vegan, but I am, like, I sit down and I do a lifestyle analysis with these people. And I say, what do you have for your breakfast? What do you have for your dinner? What do you have for your tea? And I say, well, congratulations. I know you're not eating excessive animal meat, but neither are you eating vegetables. So unfortunately, some people that call themselves vegetarians or vegans, what they're more accurately saying is that they don't eat animal red meat. And this is not the issue here. That doesn't mean because you're a vegan or you're a vegetarian that you're actually eating a healthy amount of vegetables. So, Mick, if you and I went down to Kerry, or we went to Tipperary, and we observed a bunch of deer, these animals are out eating grass. And when we look at them, they look extremely healthy. There's nothing wrong with being a vegetarian, but there is, for vegans, there are concerns. Like, unfortunately, a lot of these lovely, young, sensitive females who don't want to be associated with animals being slaughtered, and they have issues, and then they become very low in vitamin B12 and other issues. So there are deficiencies that we associated with extreme views.
So is there extreme veganism, extreme vegetarianism? Is there an extreme carnivore diet And are all of these have taken in singularity bad for you?
Yes, well, of course, if people are not having an intake of vegetables, I mean, very healthy creatures like giraffes and elephants, they are vegetarians. But we as humans have been eating animal protein. And of course, I was brought up in the late 50s, early 60s, where we would have a nice joint of meat at the weekend. We would have a cold on Monday, and we might not see meat again till the following weekend. And we grew up in societies, at least I did, where my parents were talking about the war, and people had deficiencies in iron because they weren't eating enough animal protein. Of course, you can get iron from other sources, but the point I'm making is that when I walk into supermarkets now and I see these horrible copycat burgers and copycat sausages, I wouldn't dream of buying those because of the method in which they're processed. And it's highly processed foods. We live in societies where takeaways have become too common.
Tim, it's a topic we could go into for ages, and I'd love to get some specific questions for you. I'm back on here in June for Neil's holidays, and maybe we can do something a little more extensive. Can I just ask you, what are the foods to avoid if you want to avoid processed foods the best that you can?
Well, the foods that are highly processed. Like, if you and I go into our local butcher and we get a nice piece of meat and we bring it home and we put it in our fridge, we have to use it up in a matter of days. So how come they can put preservatives and they can put compounds into this food that give them a 12-year shelf life? Like, natural food will go off very quickly if it's not used up. And it's the highly processing, and it's the incorrect way of cooking. It's overcooking them. Like, if you have a barbecue in your garden, you blacken food. And I'm delighted that radio stations like yours are bringing people's attention on how they can avoid the disease. And radios are an incredibly beneficial way of people getting valuable information. But we have to avoid extreme views. And the world has become a very imbalanced and out of balance place. And you and I don't want to add to that. So if people have convictions that they wish to be vegetarians or they wish to be vegans, they can be healthy vegans or healthy vegetarians by avoiding highly processed foods.
Tim, we'll get into it a little more extensively, if you will, during the Neil's June holidays, and we'll maybe tee it up a couple of days in advance so people can ask you specific questions, because there's very little you don't know about nutrition. Maybe it hasn't rubbed off on me, but there you go.
Listen, I am proud of Ireland. Ireland was one of the first countries in the world to be an example of, you know, forcing people the responsibility of smoking on top of everybody. So why can't your radio station be an example of keeping the middle balance road and giving people valuable information in which they can enhance their family and health members?
All right, Tim. Tim Brown, let's do an hour on it in June, and maybe we'll get a whole program out of it. You never know, but we'll get those questions lined up in advance before you come on. Thanks a million for bringing your expertise to bear this morning. Tim Brown, thanks.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
And as is normally our want of a Friday, we're going to finish with a little bit of chat and a little bit of music. But having travelled from Dublin and having had the extensive career that she's had, we've given more than the traditional 15 minutes to our next guest. We're going to give her the full half hour. So as I'm reminded, the fabulous immortal words of Dustin the Turkey. When... What?
Sorry, Dustin the Turkey.
I'm doing an intro here.
I know.
The immortal words of Dustin the Turkey when he welcomed a new president, President Robinson, just 2 hours inaugurated, onto the Den on RTE. And I want to use those immortal words in welcome to you. Jesus, it's the Bowel Mercer.
It's great to be here, Nick.
Mary Byrne, goodwill. You're welcome to the Neil Prendeville Show.
Thank you very much.
And you brought the whole entourage.
Oh, the gang
Elvis,
is here.
Elvis wouldn't have as many.
The three amigos, we call ourselves. Yeah. Cathy, the manager, and Sandra, the stylist.
Yeah, yes, the hairstylist. Yes. Yeah. There's an old saying in Cork, Sandra Dwyer would blag her way in anywhere.
But definitely.
This takes the biscuit. Sandra Dwyer blagging her way as a stylist, a hairstylist, onto a radio show.
Don't make me laugh. Go on, Sandra, tell him how much you do for me.
Oh, I do loads for me. Style your hair, pick out your clothes.
That's true.
Yeah, match your earrings up.
And keeps the Prosecco flowing.
How are we going to have a serious interview here with these two, Lou Drummond sitting next to you?
Cathy's sitting there very quiet. Not saying nothing, Cathy.
Anyway, welcome to Cork, Mary, and you're coming to Cork with the new show.
I am.
And it's called Check Me Out.
Yes.
And it's been having rave reviews. I'm interested in how the idea for this show came together. First of all, I've seen you professionally and many more times socially singing. You've a belter of a voice on you. Mm-hmm. You also have a great backstory in that, if I can, there were probably three phases to your life. There was the pre-X Factor, there was the whole circus of the X Factor, and then there's what you developed and are developing after the X Factor. Let's go back to the start and tell us about phase one.
Well, I mean, the first time I ever decided to do X Factor, I didn't actually decide. I was made do it. My niece had said to me, would I do it? And I said no, because I had already done, just to get back to a story, I'd already done a show called Nullick Number One, which was on TG Carr.
Well, let's say pre-X Factor now. So everyone knows you were the Tesco checkout girl, hence the
I
name.
I was.
Check Me Out of the play. And I know it was your late mum's birthday yesterday. I saw you putting that up on social media. And
yeah.
You obviously grew up in a house full of love, but I venture, and I don't know, that it was also a house that was full of music.
It was full of music. My dad loved country music. My mother used to do Vera Lynn. My brother Tomo, he did Tom Jones. My brother Jimmy did Matt Monro, and my sister did Dolly Parton. So we all had that, but we were the only two, myself and my brother were the only two that hit the stage. The rest of them weren't interested. But my dad, for every night, every weekend, there'd be a sing-song in our house, a huge sing-song. And I would not sing. I'd be hiding under the table. But there was one time I decided to sing, and I remember sitting on the chair and I had to turn my face to the wall to actually sing. That's how nervous I was.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And I still feel them nerves today. But
isn't that an amazing memory, that there's a kind of a gathering for a sing-song in the house, and everyone gets the noble call then, is it?
Yes, and it was hush. Like you did not speak when the singer was singing. Like the old days, he did not. When the singer sang, you kept quiet and you enjoyed the music, and that's what we used to do. And I loved it.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a great time. It was great growing up in that atmosphere.
Yeah. I love the way Billy Connolly said that. There's only two words you need to know for the song: Sherry V and Harry Vaughan. Sherry V, Harry Vaughan.
That's right. That's right. Now there was a few of my relatives that used to sing like that as well.
So growing up, obviously in a house full of love and music, you eventually found your way to Tesco, which was the launch pad.
Yes.
The fact that you were a checkout girl, much was made of that. Was much made of that when you were, you know, developing your stage persona and your act, and maybe just earning a living singing before X Factor?
Not really. I mean, like, my brother and myself used to go out the weekends, and we used to do the odd gig here and there. And that kind of happened when I was in my 40s, because I had gave up singing prior to that while I was in Tesco's and I had my daughter. So I gave up the singing. And then I was in Tesco's and I was working away, and my brother asked me to do a few gigs with him and learn the backing tracks. So I did. And my first real knowledge of the fact that I could sing was when I was in Cabra, and I was in, no, Finglas, sorry, and I was in the Shamrock, and I got to sing a song and the crowd gave me a standing ovation. I was actually shocked. And I stood there, and I think that kind of sowed a little seed of confidence.
Are you still chasing that rush to this day then?
Definitely. I mean, every time you go on the stage, you want the same feeling. Sometimes it's not there, but only for you, not the crowd. Mm-hmm. But most times, especially with this show, when I walk out on the stage, the atmosphere in the room, it's like I'm sitting in my own parlour with all the people there, and we're just having a conversation and a laugh and a joke.
We'll get to the show in full detail. Let's go now to the entry into the X Factor. You were telling me that this is how you got on. Somebody pushed you.
Well, what happened was, as I said, I did Nullick Number One, and my niece said to me, would you not do Britain's Got Talent? I said no. And then she said about the X Factor. And I remembered Simon Cowell saying he wasn't going to come back to Dublin or to Ireland because there was no talent. So I, reverse psychology, said to her, if he comes back to Ireland, I'll do it. And then I remember sitting on me till and saying to God, there has to be more to life than this. If you want me to do this or do something with my voice, open the doors and I'll walk through. And then all of a sudden, Simon Cowell said he was coming back. And I had to keep the promise to my niece.
You were committed.
And that's how that happened.
Yeah. And you got through the auditions, of course. We won't dwell on it too much because I know you have some personal feelings you'd rather keep private about the X Factor. As an overall experience, you're glad you did it.
I tell you, it was, apart from having my daughter, it was one of the best things I ever did. I mean, it gave me a huge platform. The platform I was on was down here and the other the platform they gave me was much higher. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I've now done that, made four albums, hopefully do a country album, which I want to do for my dad, and I'm acting. I never thought in my life I'd be on the stage acting. That wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have gone on The X Factor. So I'll always be grateful to that.
Okay. Now, you've been in big productions. I know you've done a lot of pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
You do a lot of shows where there's a big band backing you. You might be sharing the stage with some other stars. How did the idea for this one woman on stage expose of your life, if you like, a personal sitting room chat come about?
Well, it's funny. Before Eddie Rowley and myself got together to do the book, Donal Shields, who is now putting this show out, approached me in 2011 when I came out of The X Factor and asked me would I do it. And the management I was under at the time, which was in the UK, wouldn't allow it because they said it was too soon. And I had a lot of work to do in the UK. So it just died then. And then we were doing a show in the Civic, which was called Dirty Dustin. And Donal was there. And Rob Murphy was there. And Rob approached Cathy and asked I'd be interested in doing...
Cathy's your manager.
Cathy's my manager. Asked me, would I be interested in doing a one-woman show? And from there, it just rolled. And before I knew it, I mean, I thought it was just talks.
Would you have been ready for that without... I know you're used to being on stage, but if you didn't have the pantomime experience about, you know, not singing on stage, not talking, talking and singing.
It's a very hard thing to do, to walk out and just be on your own on that stage. I mean, at one time, the first time I did it, within the six shows that we did, I ended up with a cold sore on my lip and I ended up with a rash on my hand through, you know, being so overwhelmed, my immune system dropped. But when I walked out each night, before I even said anything, I had the crowd beside me and behind me, yeah. So... But it was very hard. It was very, first of all, it was very hard to stand there and tell your whole story. The second thing was, it was kind of therapy for me. And I was bringing up things that I'd forgotten. And they were actually, I mean, I cried more times on the stage than I did laugh. The audience were crying, the audience were laughing. And then I'd sing a song and the audience would give me a standing ovation. It's one of those things where it's scary. But once you're on the stage and you have the audience behind you, it is the most magnificent feeling you will ever get for an artist.
How scripted, or how much of it do you have committed to memory? How scripted is it?
Well, Rob Murphy took the script, took the book and read bits and pieces of it. And then we did an interview and I told him all the other things. It is scripted, but I don't stick to it because each night I'm on it, something else comes up in my mind. Yeah.
Once again, reminded of Billy Connolly... clutching at Pamela Stevenson on a side stage. He says this in his book, and he's absolutely shivering going on stage. And his last words before he walks out is, "Oh my God, Pamela, I don't know what I'm going to say to these people."
Yes.
You're not quite in that area where you've got to make it up as you go along.
No.
And we don't want to spoil the show. We just want to encourage people to go along to the show because it's been getting standing ovations everywhere that it's been so far.
It's fun. It's emotional. There's good music in it. And I mean... The likes of my age group will enjoy the music. Any age group will. But it's fun, it's incisive, it's into my life. And I can guarantee you that the audience, some of them in the audience, are going to relate to things that happened to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're going to enjoy.
A therapy in there as well, then.
Definitely, a lot of therapy.
Okay, speaking of music, will we cajole you to exercise the vocal cords?
Oh, God, you'll have to...
Say you were out last night, were you?
I was, I told you. Sandra kept the secco flowing. But I'll give it a shot and hopefully I won't be too raspy.
Okay, will we go for the lively one or the slower one first?
Let's do the lively one.
Do the lively one first. Okay, yeah. 2.5 minutes of it. This is Face the Music and Dance. Now, Mary's going to sing live. This is not recorded. The backing track is recorded, much as we did with Cathy's daughter Kaylee when she was on here. But you can throw in a line there at the end or something to make sure that everyone knows that you're live. Say hello, Mick, during the intro or something.
I will.
We go. Your headphones are on. Let's face the music and dance. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mary Byrne.
Face the music and dance. There may be trouble ahead, but while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance before the fiddler has fled, before they ask us to pay the bill, and while we still have the chance, let's face the music and dance. Soon we'll be without the moon, humming a different tune, and then there may be teardrops to shed, but while there's moonlight and music, love and romance, let's face the music and dance. Let's face the music and dance. Oh my God, Mick.
You're doing well. Slug the water there. Here's the instrumental bit in the middle.
Yeah. Is it all right? Oh. That's just me asking, is the voice all right?
Can you just stop the two girls from dancing, please?
They want to be the backing singers.
The Ronettes.
Different tune, and then there may be teardrops to shed, but while there's moonlight and music, love and romance, let's face the music and dance. Let's face the music and dance.
Well done. Ooh. Mary Byrne live in studio. We're going to squeeze one more out of you if we can.
Oh my God.
If we can persuade you between now and the close of the show. Speaking of love and romance, what's going on? Anything?
Nothing. Not a sausage.
Go on, tell us.
Not a sausage.
Not a what?
There was a Cork man at one stage. But
really?
Yeah, we haven't seen each other for a long time. And he's had a new hip, new knees, new everything. So he's living his own life. And we still keep in contact through Facebook, but nothing physically happening anymore. I'm so sad.
What's life on the road like for someone like you? You're here, there and everywhere. And I want you to talk to me a little about the bus crash as well.
Oh my God, the bus crash. That was the most scariest moment of my life. I mean, every night when we finished doing a gig, we hopped into this bus that was hired for us and we drive to the next gig. But this particular night, we're driving along on, you know, the motorway, and this huge lorry in front of us jammed his brakes on because a deer ran out in front of him. And the bus that we were in, I was asleep and I had my seatbelt on and I was fast asleep in the back of the bus. And the whole bus went into the back of the lorry, which literally the thing was written off. Mm-hmm. And
that was the menopause tour, was it?
The menopause tour, yeah. When we were over there doing, you know, menopause, the musical tour. We had a 4-month tour and this was only 6 weeks into the show this actually happened. So it was, we had to take a week or two off just to, a lot of the girls were badly hurt. Mm-hmm. But we all got back up there eventually and we did we continued on with the tour and had a great
eventually
time.
After a few weeks off, I guess.
But it was scary. It was scary. I've never been in a crash before, touch wood, and I hope I never am again. But none of the other girls had seatbelts on. Mm-hmm. Because normally we'd all get into the bus and just sit back and relax after doing the show, heading to the next venue or to the next hotel.
Next hotel, I guess, yeah.
And everybody was half asleep. And the bus just banged, and all I seen was people flying all over the place, and I'm still stuck in the seat, you know. So
at least you had the seatbelt on.
Well, I was the only one, and I was just lucky because I knew I was going to fall asleep, and I said to myself, if I don't put this on and we're going over a bump, I'll fall off the chair. So I put the seatbelt on just for pure safety. And
but you've been in big productions, the biggest of all, of course, in the world is probably The X Factor. But you've been in show productions, touring productions, musical productions, and now you're travelling with what? Cathy and your sound engineer, is it?
That's it. And we travel up and down the country and we do the backing tracks and the music and the show itself that's going to be going out. We'll have a guy driving everything there. Cathy will be doing the sound and lights and stuff like that, and the guy will be setting up
the
must
stage.
Be much more money in this, is there, Cathy?
No,
Cathy's just sitting there.
She's sitting there raking it in. Okay, let's talk about the show. And obviously, we can't spoil it for anybody, but is it a start to finish of your life? How many ups and downs? Don't give too much away, but...
Yeah, no, it's the very beginning of my life. I start with the bus crash, obviously, telling everybody I'm thankful to be here. And then it goes from birth to the 70s, to leaving school at 12 and getting my first job. And then it goes to meeting my first guy and having my first kiss, which is very funny, where I lost my virginity. There's loads of different stuff in it for everyone to listen to. And we have, at the back of us, we have videos which show the areas that I'm talking about, where I was and stuff like that. And then it gets to the X Factor. And it's the whole of the X Factor and the experience that I had up to that. The songs from the X Factor, which are videoed up on the thing behind me. And then it's... comes to lockdown and COVID and the sadness and stuff like that, and then we have hopefully a happy ending.
Hopefully it's not often you get to speak to someone who was personal friends or almost a mother figure to people like One Direction.
Oh yes myself and the lads were good. Yeah, they called me Mammy Mary and I mean, Harry Styles mooned me every morning.
he was
only 16 years of age, but I remember every morning all the lads would come down and they'd all give me a little kiss on the cheek and say, "Good morning, Mammy Mary." And then he would do the same. But then he'd walk over, go around the table and come back and say he wants to say hello as well. And he'd drop his trousers. And I mean, to me, it was looking at a little baby boy. Really was. I mean, like, but all the girls, when I say this, the young girls are like, "Oh my God, Harry Styles dropped his trousers." Wasn't that exciting?
And Mary Byrne was saying, "I wouldn't know whether to pull that or light it."
That's disgraceful talk. But the lads were everyone in the house treated me with respect.
Yeah.
And I was kind of the mammy figure. I was the older woman. And they all looked up to me and I loved every one of them. And when they made it big, the lads in particular, I was so proud. I felt like a proud mammy. Mm. You know?
There's a feeling that Simon Cowell protected Susan Boyle by putting her into second place. Mm. And that she wasn't maybe mentally ready for the superstardom that came anyway.
Yes.
Do you feel fairly done by or hard done by the X Factor?
I feel very well done by. And look, you know, I never bite the hand that feeds me. Mm. And they fed me and they gave me nothing but respect.
And the launch pad for a huge chapter and phase in your life.
The thing about it is, when you go on the X Factor, and I've watched a lot of the kids, and they think they're just going to become stars overnight. It doesn't work like that. Mm. Not everybody gets the big stardom. But what you do get, if you're talented enough and have the right people behind you, is a platform to work from. And then it's up to you to take your career in whatever direction you can.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea of it.
All right, let's get some more music. You've chosen... Rod Stewart has a lovely version of this one, and of course there's many, many versions. Someone to Watch Over Me.
Yes.
Why was that one in particular? Is that feature in the show?
It does feature in the show, and it's because of my father. When my dad passed away, I felt so lost because I was very close to my dad. Mm-hmm. And he watched over me. He always did. Yeah. And I miss him to this day. He died in 2004. My mother went into 1995, and I miss them. Even to this day, I missed him. And I also was a little mad woman. And they'll find that out if they come to hear the show, things I did on them and stuff like that, which was heartbreaking. Mm. And that sometimes still stays with me and the hurt I caused them. But for my dad, I miss him terribly. And he was really the only man that ever, ever had the key to my heart.
Okay. I don't know how you're going to sing this one now without me and you shedding a tear. Someone to Watch Over Me. Nice way to roll into the bank holiday weekend, isn't it?
Definitely. There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who'll watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who'll watch.
although he may not be the man some girls think of as handsome, but to my heart he carries the key. Won't you tell him, please, to put on some speed, follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me.
Instrumental bit again.
It's just, yeah. And it is sad, and I don't want to start crying.
I don't think anyone doubts you're singing live now, because we're talking in the middle of the song.
Exactly.
By the way, the show is the 5th and 6th of July. We'll get to that in a second.
I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wool. I know I could always be good. Me. May not be the man some girls think of as handsome, but to my heart he carries the key. To tell him, please, to put on some speed, follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me.
I'm surprised you don't do much more of the softer stuff. You've got a belter of a voice for the heavy stuff, you know, the big range stuff. But some of the sweeter, softer stuff is just beautiful. There's text coming in here. Hi, Mick. Great to hear Mary on the radio. Great show. So lovely listening to Mary. She's an inspiration for sure. A beautiful singer. Have a great weekend, Mary, and all at Red FM for Marie and Clannachilty. Another beautiful listening to Mary. My own current wife just texted him to say, well done. Tell Mary that was beautiful, and always an angle with this guy. He's a good friend of mine, Billy Newton. Hi, Mick. Shout out, if possible, to the Regina Mundi Chamber Choir, conducted by Grainne O'Neill, who won the Cork International Choral Festival.
Good on you.
Congratulations, guys. Also, say hi to Sandra D for me.
Oh, Sandra D. Look at her. She's Sandra D.
Okay, let's get to the business, I suppose. The reason you travelled all the way from Dublin to sing for us is the fact that the shows are on sale now, 5th and 6th of July.
Yes, in the Everyman Theatre.
Tickets are surprisingly reasonable.
I'm not sure what the tickets are.
I think I saw 26 or something. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But you know what? I want people to come along and just, how do I put it? Laugh with me, cry with me, and sing with me, and enjoy every moment. Because, as I said, each person in that audience is going to have something that relates. When I say something, it's going to relate to them. And it's going to be fun. I mean, I just do the maddest things in it. And I tell my story. I wear my heart on my sleeve. And I sing the songs that mean something to me, to each story that I'm telling.
Okay. How similar or how different can each show be?
Just because I will go off and do something else, I will talk something else. That's the only difference. It's kind of, as I said, it has to be scripted. It has to have a place where you're standing, where you're going and what you're doing. But when it comes to my story, if I'm on the stage and I think of something else while I'm telling a certain section, I will tell that as well.
Now you have the presence of mind, more so the confidence on stage to wander off and get back to your mark, as they call it.
And
continue with the program.
Yeah, and let's put it this way, I'm going to be very biased here and tell you I love it, and I think it's a good listen and a good laugh, and the songs are brilliant in it as well.
Okay, got to do some housekeeping. Will you wait there 1 second? Yes. And we'll come back to you. Okay. Free Food Friday winners. This is for Camille Thai. Crispy chili chicken, green curry. I can't even pronounce these. Pad Meng Mangon and Pad Prick Hang. Tofu, cashew nuts, scallions, fine beans and peppers, and 8 portions of jasmine rice and 8 portions of brown and wild rice, all with Camille Thai. And you can get them on camille.ie.
I'm sorry, folks. We're all laughing here in the background.
Free Food Friday winner is Nora Dennehy, and she's on the line. Hiya, Nora.
Hello.
Say hi to Mary Byrne.
Hi, Nora.
Mary, you're a legend, girl. You're a legend.
Thank you very much, darling. Good luck.
I remember watching you in The X Factor. I was obsessed with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you're going to come see me show.
I will, and I'll be full to the brim with this food now. Please, God.
Well done. We're sending it your way with the Red Patrollers, and you're going to get a huge, huge range of food, including 8 portions of jasmine rice and 8 portions of brown and wild rice, the crispy chili chicken and chicken green curry. Oh, I beg your pardon. What's Nora doing on the line then? I'm lost here.
I'm here.
Oh, Cork Builders Provider. Oh, sorry.
I'm in Cork Builders, yeah.
He just said in my ear, Cork Builders. He threw me completely there. Cork Builders Providers are the winners. That's where you're working. Hi to all the gang there. And you're going to get some Pad Meng Mang on. And I'm going to see if the girls can listen to this now without laughing again. Some Pad Prick Hang.
Enjoy that, darling. Okay. Enjoy it.
Well,
thanks
done.
Very much.
Aidan wins the night at the Metropole Hotel, and could I please wish the very best of luck to the Ballincollig Trailblazers, who are playing the West Cork Jesters on Saturday. Also to the Maris team, who will play on Sunday. Okay. That's the Neil Prendeville Show. Neil returns bright and early on Tuesday morning after the long weekend to stylist Sandra Dee, the only stylist to ever work in a radio show. Manager Cathy Cullinan and the irrepressible Mary Byrne.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much for coming on the programme this morning. Now let's go to news, which is on the way at midday. Have a great weekend.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.